Welcome to Reality Check. I'm here with Akura, and we're going to be talking about possibility thinking.
Hello, everybody. Hare Krishna. Glad to be here with all the devotees who are listening or other listeners, and I'm glad to be with Mahatma Prabhu today again.
So those of you who know Akura is the personification or the Maharaj of possibility thinking.
Oh my God.
That there's always a solution, there's always another way of looking at something. And when, you know, often you get in a situation and you just can't think of any other way of doing it. All you can think of is all the reasons you can't do it. And then Akura comes along and says, asks you a question, which forces you to look at it or think about it in another way.
There is always many more options than you can see in any particular moment. So you have to find ways how to get those options, and coaching helps with that. A friend who is thinking outside of the box helps with that. And you can learn to do it yourself. You can make it your own habit.
In other words, whenever you're in a situation where you think there's only one way to do it, you remind yourself there's got to be other ways. There's got to be other options. And I might not know what they are. So let me ask somebody, well, what would you do in this situation? Or can you see another alternative? Is there another way to look at it? A lot of times it's change of attitude, and everything changes. I also think some people are in that mood. There's always a way to do it if there's strong enough desire. And sometimes we just lack the desire.
If you believe in God, then you gradually develop a paradigm or a concept of anything is possible or everything is possible by Krishna's mercy. So you broaden your thinking and you start thinking that, well, let me explore, let me see what else can be done in this situation, and who else can help me, and where I can learn more about how to maximize this situation.
So along with possibility thinking comes the idea of turning obstacles into opportunities. And that's another big phrase for Akura.
Exactly.
See how to turn obstacles into opportunities. You actually end up better off than you would have if you didn't have the problem.
Exactly. This is one of the four core coaching skills that I'm teaching in my courses. And those who will attend the course that we will have soon here in Alatra, they can actually experience some exercises and learn more about it. So turning problems into opportunities is probably one of the best things I can share with devotees, and one of the things I use most frequently in helping devotees succeed.
So I want to give a nice example about what you're saying. In the class I'm giving on forgiveness now on Krishna.com every Tuesday night, we are discovering that when you have an issue with forgiveness, resentment, you have to become more compassionate to be able to deal with it. You have to grow in your ability to empathize with the other person. You have to grow in your ability to tolerate difficulties. You have to grow in so many ways. So when people come out of the process of forgiveness, they're much better persons. They've grown in many dimensions. So then they actually see how the fact that they were hurt became a blessing, in the sense that they've become such a better person by dealing with it.
I also have a recent example from my life. I injured my hand, my arm, a month ago. We were on the west coast of England on the Atlantic Ocean, and there was a group of about 40 devotees going out for the outing, and there was a devotee from India, a guest speaker. And there was kids there, children's kids, and there was stairs which lead to the sea, to the ocean, but there was no fence. So one Mataji with two girls, she went very near to the water, although it was very wavy, and somehow one of the girls slipped. And I was 2 meters away, and I saw that Mataji can't hold her. She hand, actually, she was just going towards the sea, and it was very dangerous. I mean, huge waves were there. And I just jumped to help her. And as I jumped, I slipped and ended on my elbow and, like, had a fracture on my left arm near the shoulder. And I was thinking, why Krishna has allowed me to do this? I wanted to do good. I wanted to, you know, save the girl. She's 11. And then yesterday when I was having a program with South American devotees, it occurred to me actually that what was the benefit of this injury? Now, this girl, she somehow likes me, but she thinks that I like another girl more. And for me, this was, I didn't think about it at that moment, but it was an opportunity to show her that I care about her too, and that I even wanted to risk so that I can, you know, protect her. And from that time, I mean, she was crying. She said, oh, you got injured because of me, and, you know, I'm to blame, and things like that. And she, but from that moment on, she understood also that I care about her, and she was writing me emails and say, you have to stay with us, and things like that. So my relationship with her from that point became much closer. And I also teach the kids, so, you know, if they are convinced that I care about them, it's also good for my attempts to teach them certain principles. So this whole problem with my arm became a great opportunity, and, you know, and for building a relationship with a child.
So are you saying that everything that happens happens for a reason?
Yes.
And we don't always know the reason?
Yes.
But, or, I could add my comment that sometimes we can just take advantage, look at a situation and say, well, how can we take advantage of this situation? What happened wasn't, let's say you're in a situation and what happened really wasn't good. But by any means, it wasn't good. It's not something you'd want to happen again, or to happen to anybody else. So how can we use this situation, turn it around, and make it advantageous? So I think it goes along with the same line of thinking, that there's always ways to uncover jewels, even if the jewels were not there. Or we teach a course, and in one of the courses we teach, we bring people in who don't understand karma, and we show them how their past suffering has helped them.
Wow.
And it goes to such a degree that they acknowledge that if they could live their life over, they would not want to remove that past suffering, because
it's been
instrumental in them becoming who they are today and learning what they needed to learn.
A blessing in disguise.
And you know, because for people who are not on the spiritual path, just the concept of evil in the world and apparent undue justice or undue suffering is very, very confusing. But if we understand karma as a teacher and suffering is only there because we need to learn something, then people readjust their thinking and they begin to ask, okay, what am I supposed to learn now? Because something has happened that doesn't appear to be good or desirable. And then they'll start to find. They'll look and then they'll find the lesson, and we teach, when you learn your lessons, that you don't have to suffer. Just like Krishna says, I take away the wealth of those who I love, but it's only those whose spiritual life is some way being impeded by that wealth, or whatever it is they have in their life.
Harishita danam shanai. I would like to tell a little story which illustrates the point that in every obstacle there is an opportunity. Once there was a king, and he put a huge rock, huge boulder, in the middle of the road and hid in the bushes, and he wanted to see how the people in his kingdom would react and what they would do. And then, you know, his ministers passed, some other people from the palace, then all kinds of people passed there, and all of them, actually, they just went around it. They didn't remove it. And one simple peasant came, and he just thought, well, it's impeding, you know, people's movement, so let me remove it. And he took all of his strength and pushed it. And but in that very place where the rock was, he saw something lying on the road, and he picked it up. It was a purse. When he opened the purse, there were some gold coins, very expensive gold coins. And, I mean, it was quite a bit of money there if he would sell them. And there was a little piece of paper with a message from the king. The king wrote there that, I put this rock here, and this is a reward for the one who decided to move the rock. So, this big boulder was a big obstacle, but actually underneath there was a reward or an opportunity.
Nice story. Where's that from?
I got it in my email one day. I don't remember who sent it to me.
What do they say? The gold at the silver lining at the end of the cloud?
Yeah,
the gold also. At the pot, end of the gold pot at the end of the rainbow. Of course, if one is practicing spiritual life, then there's always value in everything that happens, because you can always see things from a Krishna conscious perspective and then gain a better understanding of a situation which it may be difficult for you or difficult for others, and it naturally awakens a deeper level of Krishna consciousness, and then prepares you better to deal with similar situations in the future. Now, I have something I would like to say, which I don't think anyone has heard this before, and it's a very valuable lesson in how to deal with negativity, particularly the negativity that enters our own hearts.
I'm eager to hear.
Obviously, when one wants to attempt to practice any process aimed at purity, the impurities become obvious, and the impurities are meant to be removed from the path. So as we are progressing, the process we're working on is the positive process of attaining the mercy of God and the devotee of God, and the other process of ourselves making the effort to remove the obstacles on the path, what we call the anarthas. And as we practice Krishna consciousness, when we see these anarthas, they can become discouraging, especially if we see them years and years after we thought we were over them, and they begin to revisit us. Or we may not have thought we're over them, but they may begin to visit us in greater intensity than they have in years or ever in our life. And we can become very discouraged. So discouraged that sometimes we may even think, what's the use? After all these years, they're still there. The greed, the lust, the anger, the envy, the jealousy, the desire for name and fame, it's all still there after all these years. So there's another way of dealing with it, which is it's a very powerful way of looking at these things. And the way we can deal with it in a positive way is to understand that whatever exists within this world and whatever exists in our heart is meant to be offered to Krishna. And if there is something negative, you may think, how can I offer that to Krishna? So here's the key. The key is that attachment, whatever it is for, the attachment to the envy, the jealousy, the greed, whatever, we're attached to that to such a degree that we won't give it up. So that means that thing is valuable to us. It's a paradox. Why would something so toxic as greed or envy or lust be valuable to us? But it must be, otherwise we'd give it up. So when we see that thing coming into our heart and mind, we think, oh, here is something valuable that I can offer to Krishna rather than keep it within my own mind and heart. The thought comes to my mind, I can enjoy this thing. It's a thought which should not be there. And then we think, this thought I will offer to Krishna. I will rid it from my mind. And then, because that thought was so near and dear to me, I'm offering something very valuable to Krishna. So the negative then becomes, we turn it, it becomes a positive. It becomes the thing that I want to hold on, but if I give it up, it's a great offering. Now, of course, the people are listening, they're thinking, you can't offer your lust to Krishna, you can't offer your envy to Krishna. But in a sense, you're offering it by taking it out of your heart. You're offering it into the fire of sacrifice, because only Krishna can purify it. Or you're offering Krishna your determination and your intention to drop it.
Yeah. Wonderful. Very, very practical thing. I would like to mention a few practical techniques and tools that can help us expand our thinking and increase the number of possibilities that we have in any situation, when we face any problem or we want to achieve any result. One of them is brainstorming. Some experts say that when you do brainstorming on your own, it's called mindstorming. So whatever you call it, but it's a creative exercise where you look into as many options as possible by thinking, by writing down ideas. And I ask people to write 10 ideas, sometimes 5 ideas, sometimes experts recommend 20 ideas. And it really, really forces you to stretch your mind and to stretch your creative thinking. Another tool I have is called Gita cards, and they're available for free if you email me, and my email will be told to you by Mahatma Prabhu at the end. Gita cards are cards that stimulate your creative thinking, and they have a question and a little statement and a little quote by Srila Prabhupada. All the 55 Gita cards that I have Srila Prabhupada's quote that relates to certain points. So this also can be used. I'm using it in my courses, and you can use it for yourself, or we can also speak about how to use it effectively. So these are some of the tools that you can use so that you can expand the number of options that you have in your life.
Can you give us an example of a couple of the Gita cards?
One is called Get the Right Question. And Srila Prabhupada speaks in the purport of the fifth verse of the second chapter of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam about the importance of questions. So we had a program here also about questions, and you can learn more about questions in that program. But if you have a right question, for example, if you have a question, what else could I do, then you immediately expand your options.
I was also reading the other day that often when we're trying to figure something out, there may be a disagreement. We want to do it one way. We're trying to figure out the best way to do it. We're discussing it with someone else in our company, on our team. And they have another way of doing it. And so we're just going back and forth and perhaps trying to convince one another why our idea is better. And there's a nice question. Well, is there a third alternative? Because usually when people are trying to work something out, there's the concept that, well, I have an idea, and you have an idea, and it's either got to be a modification of my idea, or it's going to be a modification of your idea. But what about a third idea, which is completely different?
And it's better than both of us originally proposed.
Yes. And you can see how often we're not trained to think in that way. We tend to think sometimes, you know, they say, think outside the box. I think we tend to think in a funnel, because it's thinking is habitual. And they say we have somewhere like 60,000 thoughts a day, and the majority of those thoughts are the same thoughts. So we may have an habitual way of looking at something, because we always think in certain terms. It's like the funnel way of thinking. We're looking like through a very narrow pipe.
One thing that can increase the number of options is win-win thinking, that we agree to find the alternative that we will be both happy with, and that is usually better than both of us originally proposed. It requires respect from other person's opinion. It requires respect for other person's needs. It requires the ability to understand the other person. And then we agree when we start discussing or negotiating that let's work as long as needed to find this third alternative, and that's called synergy or creative cooperation.
One of the obstacles to the possibilities, or what we're calling here possibility thinking, or turning the negatives into the positives, one of the big obstacles that we often run into, both in ourselves and in other individuals, is the two words, I can't, or it can't. We come up against a wall and we just think, this can't be done, or it can be done, but it can only be done one particular way. It can't be done the other ways. And in some cases that may be true, but more often than not, the truth is only within the belief or the attitude or the angle of vision of the individual. So if we enter with a mindset that says I can't is a very interesting word because I would like to redefine it in a way that will help make more sense of what we're talking about. I can't says there is no other possibility.
Yeah.
As soon as you say I can't, or the word can't is there, you've removed every possible option. So we really don't want to use that word, I can't. If we're looking for alternate possibilities, we can't use that word because we defeat ourselves from the very beginning by using that. Of course, you might catch yourself using that word, and I think what's important to learn from this lesson is that if you catch yourself using that word, do exactly that. Catch yourself and realize what just happened. Now you've eliminated any other possibility by saying I can't. So instead of saying I can't, you could say, let's investigate other possibilities. I can't do this. Let me investigate other possibilities, how this could be done.
Or ask other people for ideas. Maybe I ran out of ideas, but somebody else can give me. If you say I can't, then you can be sure 100% that you will fail.
Bhakti Henry said that. You know Bhakti Henry?
Whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're probably right.
Yeah, that's Bhakti Henry. He's the grandfather, is it? I believe the grandfather, or great-grandfather of Ambarish Prabhu. Of course, he might not have been known as Bhakti Henry in those days, but Bhakti Henry has said many wise things, that being one of them. The point of that is you draw your path. When you say, I can't, and Bhakti Henry says, yeah, that's right, you can't. You've determined your path. Or if you say, I can, yeah, that's right, you've determined that you're going to make, that you have an intention to succeed in a particular way. You're open up to possibilities. One of the, I think, which relates to the mindset of I can't, is that as individuals, there's certain things we can't see because we view the world subjectively. We see through our own experiences, and therefore we have some blind spots where, like you say, if you speak with someone else, it may be very clear to them what possibilities are open to you, but you may have your own blind spots, and it's not that you're not capable or you can't do them, but just because of your subjective view of your environment, you can't see them.
I would like to tell a little story about how we are surrounded by the opportunities to make more spiritual advancement, to get resources for our service or for our family, to develop better friendships. But the problem is we don't see them. One of the biggest problems is that we don't see the obvious. So that's why it's good to have someone who is outside of our own mind and outside of our own box of thinking, who can give us another perspective and suggest what else is possible. So this is a true story, very often told in this world of success, by success teachers. It's called The Acres of Diamonds. So once there was a man in Africa who had a farm, and he was frustrated with his life, and one day he decided he's going to become rich and he's going to do all he can, even if he needs to travel all over the world to find diamonds. And he sold the farm and embarked on a journey and looked everywhere he can possibly try to find diamonds all over the world. And after 20 years, he came back to his country and drowned himself in the ocean because he didn't fulfill his dream and he didn't find his fortune. In the meantime, the guy who got the farm, one day he was walking around his farm and around this big property and saw some strange light near the well, near the spring. And he took, there were some stones there which had a like, strange light, and he took some of them and bring it to his friend, and he said, "What do you think this is? It's like a strange stone. I found it on my farm." And he said, "Where did you find this?" "So it's in my farm. I have tons of this. It's plenty of this there." So he said, "Well, I suspect this is like a precious stone, and let's check it out. Let's go to the guy, how you say, jeweler,
gemologist.
Yeah, and see what he says." And the man said, "Look, these are pure diamonds. You just need to clean them a little bit, and these are extremely. This is one of the most precious stones in the world." And he was thinking, "My God, I have plenty of them there." Came back, discovered the mine, the whole mine of diamonds, acres of diamonds. So, similar.
Wait a minute. Is this actually a true story?
Yes, it's a true story. And anybody who wants the full version of this story, I have it electronically. I can send it to you for free.
Okay.
So, similarly, we have so much wealth, treasure, riches within us and around us, but we just don't see it. We have people around us, but we just don't see them. The other days, I wrote on the Facebook that imagine you have someone who is praying for you every day, who is ready to do anything for you, who doesn't expect anything for you, from you, and you might be surrounded by such people, or at least one person, but you don't see them. So, you know, open your eyes, look around, and take the opportunity to accept what actually God has given you.
So the saying that I remember from the story, which I've carried with me, is you are always surrounded by acres of diamonds. So whenever you're in a situation...
Exactly.
Whenever you're in a situation, you think, "Oh, this is so difficult." Or, "How did I end up here?" And then you think of the statement, "Okay, I'm surrounded by acres of diamonds. There's value everywhere around me that I'm not seeing. I have to discover it." As you say, it could be other people. Often it is other people. It could be hidden talents, which I don't have, or I don't believe. Not hidden
you
talents
don't
that
see.
I do have, but
you don't
that
see.
I don't see. Sometimes that comes just from a lack of confidence in oneself, or even sometimes just a disconnect from your own abilities. You may have them, and often when you have an ability, it's said that if you're really good at something, you often don't realize it because you've always had the ability and you think it's normal.
Right.
You know, you might be very good at mathematical calculations. You can just do them in your complex calculations in your head, and you think everybody can do that. Say, "No, you are special. You've got this gift. You could write complicated software or whatever." So that's 1 acre. That's one kind of diamond that we all, that many of us have, if not all of us, specific abilities and talents. And they say that when you are looking for your calling, you're living your dharma, one of the things to look at is just look at what's easy for you. Because you often may take that for granted, and you may not even plug into it. And then if you see what's easy for you, you realize, actually, there's a talent there I haven't exploited. I have a gift that most people don't have. You may not even realize that. could be a gift of writing or art or whatever, creative thinking or business smarts or whatever it is. So one of the other things I've realized about this is that sometimes we just don't even, we go through our daily routine and we don't even know what else there is beyond that. Or we're not directed. So I think part of the reason people may not look for their diamonds is because they don't need them. They're going where they're going and they're okay with that. We just heard the example the other day that if you are doing something and you're satisfied not doing it well, just being mediocre at it, you don't need any help because your goal is just to be mediocre. You're happy with being mediocre, just being average at it. It's the people who want to excel, they're the ones who want to read the books, have coaches, go to seminars, because they want to become really good at it.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the people that will tend to see more of those acres of diamonds because they want it. And so if we're not really aspiring for a higher position in Krishna consciousness or greater value in the service we're doing or expanding our service.
More contribution.
Yeah, more contribution. Or whatever it is, a better relationship with a spouse, become a better parent. If we're not looking to improve, then naturally, why would we look for the possibilities, the acres of diamonds that are around us? We don't have any use for them. Mm. So I think it's important to make that point, that to activate that process, you need to be motivated to improve.
Thinking big.
Yeah, whatever situation I'm in, really, I can do it better. And because I can do it better, therefore, I should do better because it's for Krishna. My wife or husband deserves me to be a better spouse. My children deserve me to be a better parent. My guru deserves me to be a better disciple. My employer deserves me to be a better employee. Or if you have your own business, my business or my family deserves that I run this business better. So all these things. And then the question is, how do I do that? And then the diamonds start showing up when you ask that question.
I was thinking in my courses, I ask devotees, what metaphor would you use for a coach? And then they say, he's a guru, he's the super soul, he's a mentor, he's a instruction manual. And one coach gave a wonderful metaphor. He's a pyramid explorer, some who explores the treasure, hidden treasure.
Oh, nice.
And I was thinking, if we look at our scriptures, what would be the metaphor for a coach or for, I would say, a devotee friend, or you may say shiksha guru? It's kalpa riksha. Because, you know, devotee, your spiritual guide, will ask you, what do you want? And then help you achieve that. And also help you see how many opportunities, possibilities, options, and advantages are there that you don't see. So this will help you fulfill your desires. So in that sense, a preacher or a spiritual guide is like a desire tree.
Kira has a nice story for us, that something that just happened to him recently in Slovenia.
A few months ago, I was visiting Ljubljana Temple in Slovenia, giving some courses and classes and coaching devotees. And they put me in this huge, wonderful room where they receive visiting sannyasis, gurus, senior preachers. And it was cold, it was still winter. And I saw that there is only one blanket on the bed. And they have a heater, but this heater is small and the room is huge. And I was thinking, this will not, you know, heat the whole room. I'm going to freeze tonight. And it was very late. I didn't want to wake up anyone and ask for another blanket or another heater. So I was thinking, these devotees know that it's cold here in Slovenia most of the year. I'm going to freeze and in the morning I'm going to sneeze and cough and not be in shape to serve them. And then I put the heater near my bed as much as possible, like half meter, and I was covering myself with that blanket, which was not actually very thick, and just being, you know, afraid that I'm going to freeze. And the next day, I looked a little bit around that room. It's not difficult to look around that room. Everything is very visible. And there was a box near my bed, and inside was a huge warm blanket. So I didn't look that. But then another thing that I noticed that was even better and more suitable for what I wanted is on the two sofas, there is a cover which is exactly like a wonderful blanket. So I could have used that, but I haven't seen it. It was there right in front of my eyes. So I caught myself again, not seeing the obvious. Everything was there that I needed, but I didn't see it. And I started almost criticizing. So this is the unfortunate situation in which probably many times we fall into and then mess our lives.
I was thinking when you were saying that how Krishna has given us intelligence. So that's the real, and he's given us talents as well. And that's the real gift, which is like, the blankets are there in the form of intelligence, creativity, if we tap into it. As they say, we're maybe using 5 or 10% of our brain. So he's given us all these things. So just activate it, take advantage.
Exactly, use it.
Use it. See the blankets.
There is so much that you can see if you just look. If you look carefully.
So now we have to change this to say, you're surrounded by all kinds of warm blankets in the cold room of your life. You just have to see them.
Right.
And Akura is so kind that he's going to help you see those blankets if you'd like to be coached by him.
And Mahatma Prabhu too, through his courses.
We have many courses that you're going to hear more about through our websites. So Akura, his email address is akrura, akura@pamho.net, pamho.net, and his website is vedicilluminations.com/gita coaching. Gita coaching. My email address is mahat, that spells mahatsevam dwaram ahur vimuktes, that's an actual word, mahat@aol.com, or mahatmadasa, with an A at the end of das, @gmail.com. And my website is tstrain.com. And on that website, I have many articles which were originally in the form of newsletters on topics such as we're discussing. You're welcome to go there, read the articles, share them with others. And in the near future, we will have many more offerings on both of our websites. Thank you very much. We will see you next time. Hare Krishna.
Thank you. Hare Krishna.